Hi everyone. Welcome to my Inquiring Mind podcast. I am your host, Kate Kroom. I'm back for season two. I took some time off from the podcast because I had a lot going on in both my personal and my work life. My business is growing. I'm booked all through the summer, and that's really awesome. But I also manage the farmers market for the city of Sandusky, and it started back up in June. So I had a ton of work to do to get that up and running. And then while all of that was going on, my husband and I just bought our first house, which is exciting. And as you know, a little nerve-wracking. The market is insane right now. It's a lot of work to move, guys. Like, I did not realize, I mean, I didn't think it was going to be easy. You know, how people say like, oh my gosh, it's so much work to move and all this stuff. It really is. That is not an exaggeration. I don't know how people move like constantly in their lives. I don't know how they do it. I don't know. Anyways, we've been here a little over a month now and we're pretty settled. I mean, there's still stuff that we need to do. I don't have things hung up as much as I would like to make it like nice and homey, because I can't seem to commit to where I want to put all my decorations. And there's also stuff that I would like to get that I haven't gotten yet, like curtains and like a rug for the living room. I got this new couch and stuff and just weird stuff like that. It's just taking me a little while to like make it our own. And I'm just going to take my time with it because it's a lot. It's overwhelming. Super grateful, but now that we're mostly back into the groove of things, I'm ready to get back into it for season two of My Inquiring Mind. Today I bring you an episode about a lake, one of the biggest lakes in Georgia. Is it a desired vacation spot, or just a disgusting body of water with a morbid background? You'll have to listen and decide for yourself. So sit back and hold on tight. This episode is all about Lake Lanier. Lake Lanier is a reservoir in the northern area of the state of Georgia here in the United States. It was created by the completion of the Buford Dam on the Chattahoochee River, which began in 1955, and the lake actually opened for business in 1957. I said Chattahoochee like that because I absolutely had to. There's a country song, and it starts out like that. Let me look it up really quick. Okay, so I looked it up. It's Alan Jackson, and he has this song, and it is called The Chattahoochee. And the very beginning of the song starts out, and he says, "Way down yonder on the Chattahoochee." I'm not a country singer, so sorry about that. But anyways, that song instantly came to mind just now. Okay, but anyways, getting back to Lake Lanier. The lake didn't open to the public until 1974, so it was open for business in 1957, just as the dam, but then fast forward to 1974, and they decided to open it as a lake to the public. Lake Lanier was named after a Confederate Army private and poet by the name of Sidney Lanier, and that's all I'm going to say about him. The lake was built by and is still currently operated by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers for flood control and water supplies. And it's also patrolled by the Georgia Department of Natural Resources as well as local law enforcement, because this lake encompasses 38,000 acres or 59 square miles of water, which is about 625 billion gallons of water. Drum roll, please. That is equivalent to 950,000 Olympic-sized swimming pools. Can you imagine? It's huge. This lake is about 60 miles away from Atlanta, and its shoreline borders six of Georgia's counties, which makes it the largest lake in the state of Georgia. There are three states that have rights to this water because this water feeds all the rivers that go through these areas. And those states are Georgia, Alabama, and Florida. As you can imagine, it's a very popular destination. There are around 7 million people that visit this lake every single year. 7 million! I did see somewhere else that number was higher at like 12 million. So there was some discrepancy in that number when I was doing my research, but either way, whether it's 7 million or 12 million, it's still several million people every year. That's a huge number. The Netflix drama Ozark actually films many of its scenes at Lake Lanier, which if you have not watched Ozark on Netflix, go start the series immediately after listening to this episode. I have not met a single person that does not like this series. It is so good. So yeah, fun fact, much of the lake scenes in Ozark are filmed at Lake Lanier in Georgia. Now here's the thing about Lake Lanier, or one of the many things about it rather. So in order to flood the area to make Lake Lanier, the U.S. government destroyed more than 50,000 acres of farmland, and they also displaced hundreds of families, countless businesses, and wait for it, relocated 20 cemeteries in the process, including the bodies. But don't worry, it gets worse. They didn't manage to move all of the grave sites, so there are several which are still submerged right at the bottom of Lake Lanier. Still today, they're still down there. You can go down really, 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 really far and see them. There are pictures. They're still there. And to keep on with the creepy, let me add that most of the buildings, structures, and roads from the original town that were flooded out remain intact below the water surface today. If you do a simple Google search, you can easily find photos from divers of their street signs and buildings and gravesites in the lake. If you Google it though, you will also see photos of the lake when the water is low, like during droughts and stuff, and there are like structures sticking out of the water and like old dead trees and stuff because the lake is so low that you can start to see some of the shit that is down there. Remember when I said millions of people visit and vacation Lake Lanier every year? Well, now knowing what we do, that means that those millions of people are swimming in, around, and above a literal underwater ghost town. But what gets me the most is the cemeteries and the bodies. Are people not thinking about how when it floods really bad on land, you know, like when there's like severe floods, how sometimes grave sites and cemeteries are washed up and stuff because of the water? So imagine that going on for years. Those bodies being submerged in water for literally years on end. Bodies and coffins, or maybe lack thereof, depending on what type of burial the family couldn't afford. They're just sitting in water. They're rotting and so on. So I think hopefully you get where I'm going here. And you swim there willingly for enjoyment? Are you not worried and grossed out by the who knows what is in the water that you're swimming in? That alone is enough for me not to get in this water. Like, I get it. Like, people aren't thinking necessarily about dead corpse and stuff down there, but they're there. It's not just the cool looking towns and the stone grave sites. There's actually dead rotted bodies that have been in the water, and however they're coping with that is getting put back out into the water that you're swimming in. So yeah, that's gross. That's sad. We're gonna move on now. This lake even has signs that state if you enter the water, you're doing so at your own risk and you probably shouldn't swim in this water. The lake has random drop-offs, and the drop-offs can range anywhere from 80 to 100 feet deep. Reportedly, there are over 600 people who have died in the lake since it opened to the public in 1974. Now, I don't know why, but I do know there's a bunch of you out there that are still asking, well, what makes this so dangerous? Well, if the dead bodies and the remains floating around in the water that you're swimming in combination with the 80 to 100 foot drop-offs submerged in a ghost town below, are not enough for you, I've got some more reasons that you should probably stay clear of Lake Lanier. So there are countless deaths and reports of missing people every year here. And honestly, it's all over the board for the causes of deaths. But one of the biggest is there are an unusual amount of boat accidents on Lake Lanier. I'm talking boats hitting other boats, boats hitting people, boats hitting jet skis, boats hitting docks, boat explosions, boats sinking, and even random and unexplained boat malfunctions. This lake has a severe history of death and missing persons and tragedy, but it really started getting attention in 2012 when there was a series of multiple accidents that happened. So to start, most of you guys know the famous rapper by the name of Usher. His stepson died after sustaining injuries when he was hit by a jet ski. The jet ski ran him over while he was inner tubing on Lake Lanier. And then that same summer, there were two brothers who were on a pontoon boat with their other family members when another boat struck their pontoon and the two boys were killed instantly. Now, both times the persons were drunk and they failed to control their vessels, and yes, they were charged. But because of these incidents, two laws were enacted thanks to the push from the grieving moms of Kyle Glover and Jake and Griffin Prince. Both the Prince brothers' mom and Kyle's mom, who was previously married to Usher, began efforts to reform boating laws in Georgia. Their efforts were successful in the passage of the Jake and Griffin Prince BUI law and also the Kyle Glover boat education law. The new boating laws changed several significant things. This happened in 2013. They included lowering the blood alcohol level down to 0.08. As you know, here in the States, which is the same blood alcohol level for operating a motor vehicle, and it changed down to 0.08 from its higher and more lenient level, which was 0.10. Other rules now require kids under the age of 13 to wear a life jacket whenever they are on the boat that is in motion. When the boat isn't anchored, life jackets for kids under 13 are mandatory. Before, kids only under the age of 10 were required to wear a life jacket. So I hate to say it, not to sound mean or morbid, but at least something kind of good came from these three tragic deaths. More recently, on May 26th of 2020, so just last year, a 33-foot boat that was adrift, just out there floating in the early morning hours out on Lake Lanier, was hit from the rear by a 36-foot boat coming to its aid. Authorities reported that 13 people were injured in the collision. Luckily, nobody had to be hospitalized, so not too severe of injuries. But the offending boat's operator was, once again, cited for being under the influence. Soon after, in June of 2020, a crash left a 9-year-old little boy dead and a 13-year-old missing when a motorboat struck a pontoon boat carrying a dozen people. Again, 80 to 100-foot drops makes it very hard to find someone who potentially drowned or went missing. That is very sad. Three other people were injured in that same crash, and the man responsible for the crash was a complete piece of trash because he fled the scene. Obviously, he was later arrested. You can run, sir, but you cannot hide. You will always get caught. 2 weeks after that, another man was injured and killed in yet another boating accident on Lake Lanier. Now, this one, there are very few details that released. Only the victim's hometown and that he apparently died from drowning during the crash. Yes, this can happen at any lake at any time, but what I'm getting at is the number of incidents happening all of the time here are absurd. I have a few graphs that I'm going to post on social media that will go with this episode for you guys to check out. The graphs show a few different things. The first one shows the number of boating accidents at Lake Lanier, as well as three other big, well-known lakes. The graph is for the years of 2015 through 2018, and two of the lakes had 0 to less than 15 boating accidents per year. One had less than 20 all 4 years, and Lake Lanier had roughly 30 to 40 accidents per year. per year. Is that because it's so big? So more space for boats to crash? Is it because so many people are going there for vacation and for parties, so there's more alcohol-induced accidents and unawareness? Whatever you want to think, that's up to you. I'm just saying a lot of tragedy is happening here. This lake experienced 57 boating fatalities, so not just accidents, as I just described. Straight up deaths, 57 deaths because of boating, and 145 drownings between 1999 and 2018. So it was already going on, but then from 2015 to 2018 alone, Lake Lanier saw 43 lake-related deaths. So those first numbers were from boat fatalities alone. And, you know, that was over 20 years almost. So then from 15 to 18, 4 years, in just 4 years, they had 43 lake-related deaths, not even having to do with boats. So 57 boating fatalities and 43 just other fatalities. That's a lot of death. There have been many amateur divers and thrill seekers that think it would be fun to take it upon themselves to swim or dive into Lake Lanier to try and see this underwater town and all of the cemeteries. Obviously, this is not a good idea, especially if you are not a trained professional, and especially not alone. But here we are. People are stupid, and it's still happening. So many people go missing at Lake Lanier so often that it is thought that they probably get tangled or stuck on trees or sign or other debris that is under the water. And obviously when this happens, it causes them to drown and they just become a missing person. There are a very small number of people that have actually survived close calls or drowning incidents, but the number is way lower than the number of people that actually do drown and go missing in this lake. Some of the survivors have mentioned that it feels like they're being pulled down below when they're drowning, which leads me to the legends about the lake being haunted. There are many reasons that people could think that this lake is haunted. Maybe it's because, you know, some of the towns that once sat here were sundown towns, which if you do not know what that means, I'll be getting into that later on in this episode. Maybe they think it's haunted because of the disrespected grave sites that were flooded over as if they were nothing. Or maybe it's because of the many deaths of the missing people that were never laid to rest. Most of these reports are just your typical ghost story, you know, the legend of a ghost woman and her long flowing dress that just haunts the lake, the mysterious arms that grabbed them from down below and tried to take them under. I'm not saying it's haunted, I'm not saying it's not, but if you want to deep dive into the creepy that is Lake Lanier, check out the hashtag Lake Lanier on TikTok. There are all kinds of informational and very creepy videos from people who actually visit there, including one that's gone viral by the user at Old South, which shows a video of what looks like legs and feet, or the shadow of legs and feet, that are just floating right below the water's murky surface. And meanwhile, this like upbeat, almost like infomercial sounding music is playing like over the video, like just kind of like happy music, which just makes it even more creepy. I think the spooky legends are both enough to keep people away, but also to draw even more people near, because I can't deny I enjoy like some real life spooky stuff, but I also have absolutely no desire to go into the water at this lake. What's that you say? You still want to go swim in the lake with the dead corpses floating around, with the polluted water, with the 80 to 100 foot drops, with the chance of getting hit by a boat or ran over by a jet ski? You're still not convinced that this is a dangerous and gross place to visit? Okay, I'll keep going. Because yes, there is more. So every year, all kinds of metals and woods and other debris are found floating in the lake. You know, Probably because they are breaking off from the street signs and the grave sites and all of the other crap that's sitting in the bottom of this lake. This obviously poses a huge safety issue for swimmers, divers, tubers, skiers, you name it, who likely do not see this hazard until it's too late. People have had houseboats that have sat there on the lake since the lake opened, and they're starting to fall apart, and there are pieces actually sinking into the abyss of the lake from these boathouses. According to an article on 11alive.com, it can cost anywhere from $10,000 to $15,000 to have an old boat or dock hauled off, and that's only after you get the boat or the dock out of the water yourself, which I'd imagine is a hassle and an added cost all in itself. Is this the reason why so many people are letting their houseboats rot on this lake? If they abandon them, it's no longer their problem, right? Or so they must think. There are professional divers that dive the area to see all of the junk that sits at the bottom of this lake. And according to that same article on 11alive.com, it was said that you could actually see a petroleum sheen on the water. So all of these crashed or sunken boats, houseboats, docks, all these things that are falling apart and that are left behind obviously have oil and gas on or in them. So when they're abandoned, that gas and oil has nowhere else to go except into the water where you want to go swimming at. Remember, this isn't just a lake sitting out in the middle of nowhere. This is a water supply for people, and it's going into their water systems. Not to mention the poor wildlife who rely on this water, the turtles, the birds, all of these animals, and the fish, which you catch and some people are actually eating. Don't make me go back and explain to you what's floating in the water. The fish are eating the water. They're eating the stuff that's in the water. Fish will eat anything. It should be noted that while I was doing my research, I saw that there is an annual fishing tournament on Lake Lanier, and I want to know if people are eating those fish, or do they just catch them and then release them, or what? Like, how does that work? Someone please tell me, because that is disgusting. It is not good for anyone. So I've told you the lake is haunted. I told you there is a big safety issue because it's extremely deep and they will not be able to recover you if you drown or you go missing down there. There is dead body remains floating in the water that you are potentially getting in your orifices while you are swimming here. There's an unusual amount of boating, jet skiing, water sport accidents. If you're not getting it yet, what I've been trying to tell you this whole episode is stay away from Lake Lanier. Stay out of the water at Lake Lanier. Just don't do it. Or do. Live your life. It's up to you. But, you know, you probably shouldn't do it. Moving on to part two of this episode, I am going to get into the dark history of the land, of the people, of what was before Lake Lanier was just all of a sudden abruptly created. So for that, I am issuing a trigger warning. Trigger warning. Now is your cue to go if you're triggered easily. This is a hard topic to talk about. There's a lot of dark stuff in this. Anyone who has done the research on Lake Lanier probably knows exactly where this is going. It's, at least to me, I think it's hard to talk about Lake Lanier without talking about this history. I think it would be a disservice to not talk about this. So here we go, just diving right in. I have a definition for you. If you remember earlier in the episode, I talked about sundown towns. If for some reason you do not know what a sundown town is, a sundown town is an all-white neighborhood or area. These all-white neighborhoods basically practice racial segregation by excluding any non-white people from their quote-unquote their neighborhoods with laws sometimes, but usually it's intimidation and definitely violence. Sundown towns are also known as sunset towns, gray towns, sundowner towns, and these aren't just towns. They're oftentimes whole entire counties or like suburban areas. While I would like to think that sundown towns don't exist anymore, because that's fucking absurd, I was actually informed by my husband, who is African American, that there are sundown towns still today. And he named a few off the top of his head in our own state. And that is just totally absurd to me. Like, I really cannot believe that. That's just absolutely disgusting. Like, this is 2021. Do better. Don't fucking live in a sundown town. And if you do and you support it, you're trash. But anyways, getting back into the history, because this really ties into what I want to talk to you guys about. In the early, like, 1960s and before, it was practiced by, as you were driving and you would enter a new county or a new town or a new suburb that was considered a sundown town, they had these signs that were posted right at the edge of their county lines that read, quote unquote, colored people have to leave by sundown. Unfortunately, this practice was not just restricted to the southern states. And like I said, up until the early 60s, there were many northern states that were just as inhospitable to people of color and black travelers. They were just not welcoming in their states, but Alabama and Georgia were some of the worst. Now, I mentioned at the beginning of this episode when I explained to you where Lake Lanier was located, that it was huge. It covers several counties. It supplies water to several states. Like, this area is huge. Now, one of the counties, one of the main counties that is now buried by Lake Lanier, was a county by the name of Forsyth County. And this county was one of the worst in racial history. Don't get your panties in a bunch. Hold tight. Just hold on. It's all going to tie back into my message for this episode. And in Forsyth County, there was a town, I guess you want to call it, by the name of Oscarville. And it was a primarily black community. Oscarville, Georgia was the location, any like history buffs out there will know, it was location of the 1912 racial conflict. And basically what that was it sparked basically a whole bunch of lynchings of black people. Now, in my research that I did on trying to figure out what caused this racial conflict, there were several different things that branched out from this, but there are two stories that stuck out to me. And basically all it came down to was white women being attacked and black men being accused as suspects. The two that, again, stuck out to me, there's several things. This is really messy to research. It's like impossible to get down to the detail and all of the history that goes into this. But one woman that was white accused two black men of supposedly breaking into her home and raping her. They just took the white woman's word for it. There was never an investigation done, any questioning, nothing. They just took her word for it. Around that same time, there was a white teenage female that was left in the woods, severely beaten and raped pretty bad, and she never ever regained consciousness. So police never got a statement from her about who did this to her. There were no witnesses, nothing for them to go on. I guess at the time, a rape kit wasn't a thing. I don't know all those details. Maybe it was, and they just chose to take matters into their own hands, because instead of conducting a proper investigation, they decided, oh, well, there's these black men. They live closest to where this incident happened on the edge of the woods. They had to be the one that did it. We're arresting them. While I was doing my research, I got a lot of my information from an article on 11alive.com where they said that one of the men that was accused of this crime, he confessed to the crime and he also implicated the others. It said that this confession was coerced by white residents and white police officers. And even though this black male, who, by the way, was only 16 years old, went along with what they said, they still took him, tied a rope around his neck, and they hung him from a well. Even though he did what they said. He did what they said, and they still killed him. The other suspects were taken to the Forsyth County Jail, where, unfortunately, a lynch mob, which, wrap your head around that, that was a thing, a lynch mob of hundreds of white residents started to form outside of the jail. After these men were taken into custody, the sheriff at the time decided, I've had a long day, I'm going to go home. And he only left one person at the jail to guard these prisoners, while he knew that this lynch mob was camping up outside. He, with hundreds of people, mind you, hundreds of racist white people are outside of this jail where these prisoners are being held, these black prisoners are being held for the death of a teenage girl, and the sheriff decides, I'm just going to leave one person in charge. Was that intentional? Because to me, kind of seems like it. How can one person hold back hundreds of racist white people from attacking these black prisoners inside this jail? How would that be possible? Was it intentional? Was it not? Make up your own mind. To me, it seems suspicious to do something like that. It just seems to me like he is setting that deputy up for failure. Also, maybe that deputy, given the time, was also not a very great person and he had no intention of guarding those prisoners. Sorry, that was the neighbor's dog giving his two cents on the issue, apparently. His name is Brock, by the way. So this lynch mob made big news, and it's part of the reason that we have the 1912 racial conflict, because it sparked the lynching of Rob Edwards. Now, Rob Edwards was one of the prisoners that was inside of the jail that is being held for the attack of this white teenage girl that was beaten and raped. So this very, very large crowd gathered outside of the jail after a while of beating their way inside the jail, taking out the cop, supposedly. Maybe he let them in. They went inside and they dragged Rob Edwards out of the jail. They beat him with crowbars. They drug his body around town, tied to a wagon. And then eventually they took his corpse. They hoisted it onto a pole. And all of those hundreds of people in that crowd decided to take turns shooting at his body. Not one single person was held accountable for this lynching, despite the thousands of witnesses, despite it being hundreds of people that took part in this, not one single person was held accountable. So these events, as well as many other events, are what really started to enrage white people. Just really, really enraged them. Let me tell ya, man, these Forsyth County white people, they're just getting so pissed off at these black people. And after Rob Edwards was killed, there was this horrible headline in the October 13th, 1912 edition of a newspaper at the time that was called the Atlanta Constitution. And the headline said, quote, "Enraged white people are driving blacks from the county." The article went on to say that, quote, "Recent outrages committed against white women in the county have so enraged white people that many of them have determined to drive the Negroes, the good, the bad, and the indifferent, from this county," end quote. And for those of you who think that sounds a little far-fetched, I have the actual newspaper article, a picture of it, that I will post on the Instagram page so that you guys can see it. It is only part of the article, but it has the headline and like the first few sentences of the article on it. I had to pay to unlock the entire article and I wasn't going to do that, but I will post what I was able to retrieve. Also, I want to add that it was not unusual for them to post lynchings in the newspaper, like you're talking about the circus coming to town. Like, it would say so-and-so and so-and-so, like their last names, were hung on the hill today. And then the body of text would say, hundreds of people gathered today with kids on their shoulders to watch the lynching of blah, 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 blah. I will post another picture of another newspaper article that's an example of this. Like, it's insane. It's insane. Okay, so I told you, hold on, just be patient. This will all tie back in together. So this racial cleansing, it just sounds horrible. I hate saying that. Racial cleansing, like seriously. But that's what it's called. The racial cleansing may have started in 1912, but it kept going on and on and on and on. All the way up until 1987, when yet again, there was more incidents and it made the headlines. But before we talk about that, we're going to go back to 1955 when this whole Buford Dam, which is now known as Lake Lanier, came about. Okay, so this racial cleansing with these sundown towns and all this horrible treatment of Black people is still going on. And we're at 1955 now, okay? So, like I told you, one of the towns that existed before Lake Lanier was created was Oscarville, Georgia. Oscarville was a primarily Black community, and it was doing very well for itself by now. They had racetracks. There were farmers with, like, passed down land, family to family to family, these farms that were established. Just people were doing good for themselves. The Black community was finally doing well. It was thriving. It was just a small community, this small little area, but it was doing good for itself. It was finally thriving. It had something of its own. And then along came the government and said, hey, we want your land because we're going to put in this dam and you don't have a choice. You can either die or we'll pay you off for your land and you can get the hell out of here and go start a new life somewhere else. We don't care where, just get the hell out of here. Can any of you even imagine being inside your own home, on your own property, on your own farm that you've just totally committed your whole life to, like, taking care of, to building so that you could pass down to your children and they could pass down to their children? Can you imagine being inside your own home on your own property and someone from the government shows up, some white man with a briefcase and who knows who else with him, knocks on your door and says, get the hell out or die. We can shoot you in the head or you can take this half-assed check and get the fuck out of here. Can you imagine? I read somewhere that there was a man, let me find his name, Alex Hunter, who bought his farm for $1,500, okay? $1,500, and he worked his whole life to create what he had. They came in and they wrote him a check for $550 and told him to get the fuck out or die. So they came in to Oscarville and just destroyed one of the only, well, probably not one of, probably the only Black community that was there at the time. They didn't want them thriving. They didn't want them to have anything for themselves. They didn't want them to be successful. They didn't want them to be smart. They didn't want them around. They decided Oscarville was also going to be the area where they were going to put this dam. And if you remember at the beginning, this destroyed more than 50,000 acres of farmland, displaced hundreds of families, countless businesses, and like I said, relocated 20 cemeteries in the process, including the bodies, including some and not the bodies. Some of them were just left, especially in Oscarville, because they didn't give a damn about them because they were people of color. So their bodies were just left. Their grave sites were just left. The amount of disrespect. And what I think people aren't thinking about maybe as much when they hear about the government coming and pretty much forcing Black people out and giving them not even enough money to get by, you know, just get the fuck out. When people hear that, I don't think they're thinking about probably, I don't know how many, tons of Black people are probably like, fuck you, like, we're not moving. This is our land. We've worked hard for this. We have a right to this. Who are you to come in and tell us that we need to leave what we've worked for? We can only imagine what happened to those people. So they didn't have a chance to leave. And if they didn't have a chance to leave, when the government came and flooded in this area, their bodies were just left there. They weren't laid to rest. They were just killed off and then flooded over like they were nothing. Like they were just dirt in the earth. And to imagine now where all of this tragedy happened, there's a tourist attraction above it. People are just swimming, having this great time. It has this horrible history. It just seems so sad and disrespectful and disgusting to me. Like I said, there's a heck of a lot of sad history that I just don't have the time for, but I did feel the need to just, like, you know, at least inform you guys that, yeah, there's this great place to some people, and yeah, it's, oh, it's spooky and it's haunted and, like, all of the fun stories and then some of the more sad stories, but then you also need to know the really tragic history about things. The more you know, the more you can be intentional with the choices that you make in your life and your experiences that you have with other people. And some people don't have someone else in their life to make them realize that people who are not like themselves aren't always treated equally, even in today's society. So if you got anything out of this episode, I hope you just learn to have compassion for other people. It's okay to be different. It's what makes the world beautiful. And if you can't take that away, I hope you at least learn to stay the fuck away from Lake Lanier. Until next time, bye!